Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
The number of cattle on feed on January 1st was just under 11.7 million head, which was about 3% below a year ago.
USDA livestock analyst Shel Shagham recapping the latest cattle on feed report.
During December, approximately 1.8 million head of cattle were placed on feed, which was about 8% below a year ago. Just over 1.7 million head of cattle were marketed, which was about 6% below 2022. There were about 4.7 million head of heifers and heifer calves on feed, which was about 1% below a year ago, but did represent about 40% of the number of cattle on feed. And this number would be up of almost a full percentage point from where we were at this time last year.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Well, nobody understands better, or your listeners, how important the Farm Bill is.
Ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee from Arkansas, Senator John Bozeman.
This contract, I view as a contract, knowing what is going to be the programs regarding all the safety nets that are going to be in place. This allows farmers to go to the bank, borrow the money that they need, and then, two, you know, have the ability to know that they do have a safety net in place that will cover various things that happen over the next 5 years. So it's really important. We started our hearings. We're working with the House, and we have a great relationship both with the chairman, ranking member, and then again working with Chairman Stabenow. My goal is, I tell her, you know, she and Senator Roberts, the rest of the committee, worked really hard, and with their leadership, we got a record number of votes in the last Farm Bill for the Farm Bill program, and my goal is to surpass that and beat her and Pat.
But can they get a Farm Bill done this year?
I think everyone is committed to doing that. This is not only about, you know, our farmers in the field. This is about rural America. In Arkansas, agriculture is 25% of the economy. On the other hand, when you get in outside of any town of any size, and it doesn't matter where you're at in America, it's really 85 or 90% of the economy. So, again, it's so important for so many reasons. So we're working hard to help other members of Congress. We've got a lot of new members of Congress, both in the House and the Senate, making sure that they understand how important this is. And then you've got the nutrition aspect, which is also very important. We've got a lot of people in the United States that, for one reason or another, need some help. And that's what that portion of the bill is all about. So I'm confident that at the end of the day, certainly, as always, you know, bills look differently in the House, they look differently in the Senate. Then you come together and sort out those differences and get a result that not everybody can thinks is perfect, but a result that everybody can live with. And as you know, and we've talked about this many times in the past, farm bills aren't Democrats and Republicans. They're regions of the country, and then they're the various commodities that are affected and the nutrition programs.
What else does Congress need to focus on?
Well, I think we have a number of challenges, opportunities, however you want to frame it. Lots going on in the country right now, and really agriculture is indicative of all of these things, but it's also in every other industry that we face. Things, the inflation aspect is so very important. We've got to do as a Congress all we can to tame that. You do that by controlling spending. We're seeing that in the agriculture world with tremendous fluctuation in commodities. Labor is a huge issue, and that's going to take the wisdom of Solomon to solve. But the first thing you've got to do there is secure the border. Supply chain issues are a constant. Again, making sure our ports, you know, our inner waterways, all of those kind of things are working and functioning well. And then pushing back against the overreach, things like Waters of the U.S., the new rule, which is as bad as the old rule. I say that it's as bad as the Obama rule. The Trump rule was good, but pushing it back against the overreach of regulation. So, you know, all of these things we have to address, and these are things that not only affect agriculture, but they affect every business, every entity in America.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The ECORA Act.
Doug Wareham is president and CEO of the Kansas Bankers Association. ECORA, what is it?
Enhancing Credit Opportunities for Rural America. There has been a bill percolating in Congress for the better part of the past two decades. And that bill, what it would do is it would help bring relief to ag real estate borrowers and rural housing borrowers by creating a federal exemption from federal income tax, the taxes that banks have to pay when they make loans and earn interest income on ag real estate loans or rural housing loans. I'm pleased to report we're building momentum on that issue, and it's a key critical time for that because, as you know, we're dealing in a rapidly rising interest rate environment. So interest rate costs are going up for ag borrowers, and having that backup of being able to refinance ag real estate is going to become more and more important if this interest rate increases continue or protrude long term. So the ECORA Act would create that exemption. We in Kansas actually adopted the ECORA concept at our state level 2 years ago, and it takes effect this coming January. So in Kansas, after January 1, banks will be able to be more competitive on interest rates on loans they offer for ag real estate and rural housing. And I'll define rural housing as any Kansas rural community of 2,500 or less. Our state level bill made banks about 30 basis points more competitive by giving them tax relief that allows them to offer lower interest rates to farmers and ranchers. If we were able to get the same thing at the federal level, we're talking about the federal income tax on interest income, which is 21%. If we got an exemption there, banks, ag banks across the country could be up to 125 basis points more competitive on ag real estate loans and rural housing loans. So we expect a big push for that in 2023.
From one acronym to another, what is ESG?
Environmental, social, and governance. And probably the biggest challenge with ESG is everybody has their own interpretation or definition for what it is. I just want to share my thoughts on it, representing 230 banks across the state of Kansas and our 20,000 bank employees that are hearing more and more about this issue from regulators. They're certainly hearing about it from the media and wondering, well, what's it going to be? My concern is ESG has the potential to be a wrecking ball for the banking industry. And that's because we have extremists on both the right and left that have two very different interpretations of what ESG should or shouldn't be. From the left, we have those who would like to see bank regulators use environmental scores or social credit scores to basically dictate or drive banks to only loan to certain entities. And in a state like ours, where fossil fuels may not be popular by some on the far left, but their legal industries, the oil and gas industry in our state is a huge part of our state's economy, and right behind that is agriculture, which is a huge part. And there are those on the extreme left, mainly from the environmental standpoint, that would like banks to have to live up to these scores that rate them on what they do, and they're trying to change who banks loan to. On the conversely, we have conservative, far-right conservative politicians on the right that are saying, well, hey, we don't want banks to not loan to anybody, so we're going to penalize you if you don't make a loan. And as you can imagine, banks often specialize. I mean, some banks are ag banks. Some banks focus on mortgage and housing loans. Some are commercial business lending banks. We don't want Congress, we don't want our regulators to get involved in telling us who we can and can't loan to. As long as it's a legal business and a legal entity, we should have that right, but banks are businesses too, and they should be free to loan to the markets that they want to serve and not be penalized.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Profit margins have shifted from the benefit to the benefit of the processor and retailer from the farmer and rancher in the last 8 years.
Jesse Huff is with Processor Nebraska Beef and Lamb on why they wanted to pursue a vertically integrated model.
Our conclusion is we need to shift our participation in the processing and retail to be sustainable on a long-term basis. Secondly, many small butchers have gone out of business in the last 20 years. Currently, there's limited space to harvest animals on a local basis for producers who want to custom harvest and market their products from the farm-to-table concept. Also, the large processors, the big four we call them, cannot accommodate what I would call niche markets. That may be a religious-based harvest requirements or specialty meats such as Wagyu or Kobe. Third, the sheep and goat farming in the upper Midwest has been declining. We are considering the development of locally raised sheep and goat operations to provide inventory to harvest in our plant for ethnic market needs. We want to assist young local farmers with an opportunity to diversify their operations with locally raised sheep and goat by providing seed stock to start their operations. Recently, Costco has developed relationships with young farmers in the area, and we kind of want to mimic their model. The state of Nebraska and the USDA already have great programs to help young farmers and develop this diversification in their operations. Fourth, the business risks are just not involving the cattle market. Supply chain issues are showing up in input costs for our farming, input feed costs for our livestock, and also increased costs of construction for our project. From our initial budget a year ago, we've seen a 20% increase in cost for our project. This is added risk. We continue to evaluate those risks and hope we can still accomplish our goals.
He was speaking at a recent Farmers for Free Trade event on the business plan.
Some of the existing businesses that we're involved in, our multiple family operation of 20 team members consists of a 350-head cow-calf operation, a 5,000-head cattle feeding capacity. We also raise 1 million bushels of corn, 250,000 bushels of soybeans, and 10,000 tons of forage. These products are primarily used to feed our livestock, and the manure from the livestock fertilizes our fields. In the fall and the spring, we also grow 9,000 acres of cover crops. This is for carbon sequestration, soil health, water quality, and animal grazing.
And was asked, why make the investment in that farm-to-table concept?
We believe today's consumers want to be closely connected to the people who produce their food, the farm-to-table concept. One of our team members is an immigrant to the U.S. from Iraq. As a refugee in a UN 27,000-person camp, he took a leadership role in the distribution for that camp. Many of the refugees from that camp now live in the United States in large Midwest cities. These ethnic groups are requesting halal products in sheep, goat, and beef. We can accommodate these religious harvests and follow the quality and humane USDA standards of animal harvesting. We also want to continue to serve our local market within 200 miles of the facility. This accommodates consumers who want to fill their freezers with locally raised meat and provide custom harvests for neighboring animal producers who have existing brands or retail markets.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We have passed the most ambitious climate and clean energy laws in United States history.
That's the Secretary of Energy, Jennifer Granholm.
Bipartisan infrastructure law is really sort of the backbone of the president's strategy because it really invests in the frame, the scaffolding of our nation's clean energy infrastructure, including our electric grid and next generation technologies like clean hydrogen or long duration storage or carbon dioxide removal. Some of you are really familiar with those. These technologies are all going to be located in large scale demonstrations in communities across the country. Many of your cities are already involved in these applications. So that's the first bill.
Granholm speaking at the U.S. Conference of Mayors recently in Washington, D.C., said the second part is
the second is the CHIPS and Science, which is, of course, the brain, which strengthens our competitiveness by boosting domestic semiconductor manufacturing and driving innovation. And those are going to be factories all across the country, too, and some of you have experienced that.
The third?
The Inflation Reduction Act, which really is the lungs of the strategy, because it breathes life into the clean energy economy through what I think are irresistible financial incentives for families and for businesses to adopt clean energy technologies and save money. So altogether, these three laws form really a modern industrial strategy because they're going to create millions of jobs and they're going to bring supply chains home. They're going to give American families more breathing room. They're going to give our planet a fighting chance. So we can already see it. This is happening.
and there are big investments.
In the last quarter of 2022, the private sector announced $40 billion in new clean energy manufacturing investments, which is about as much as we saw in all of 2021. There is huge momentum here. Factories being built for supply chains for batteries for electric vehicles. There have been 70 announcements of factories for batteries for electric vehicles since the president took office, over $91 billion worth of investment. So the bottom line is this means good paying jobs for your residents, but it means energy security here at home, and obviously it means economic growth powered by these industries.
And since she was speaking to mayors around the U.S., said there's incentives for cities and towns.
Embedded in these new laws are resources directly for you to help bring the opportunity of clean energy home to your community. So a lot of these are through resources coming out of the Department of Energy that was assigned through these laws. One of them I know you're aware of is the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grant Program. You know it well. You helped to make sure this was in the bill, funded by the bipartisan infrastructure law. So the ECBG program is going to invest $430 million in clean energy and energy efficiency products throughout state and local and tribal governments across the country. And I want to thank you. I want to thank the U.S. Conference of Mayors for everything that you have been doing to advocate for this program, for to educate local governments about it. And I'm pleased to announce that you can actually start applying today for the formula grant funds. Yes, apply. Get it home.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We've come into this year in a real, into 2023. We're going to go into it with a lot of liquidity.
Brad Guzzi is Senior Vice President of Agribusiness Lending with BMO Commercial Bank.
We've had some really good margins in the dairy space over the last 12 months. It's looking really positive going into the tail end of this year. That margin's going to shrink next year. The question, the thing that scares me is demand destruction. Right, as interest rates go up and inflation and everything else, when do people quit buying what we're producing, right? And how does that demand start shrinking back? And as that demand starts shrinking back, that's going to start impacting our bottom lines on the farms. And that's what keeps me awake. I mean, that's my concern, is when does that happen and when do those margins tighten up? And when does that eat into the liquidity of our farms, and how does that happen? You know, what does that cause us to have happen?
But he does warn that tough times in ag will affect local communities.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm trying to remember the name of the president who said it, but if you let grass grow up in the towns, new ones will sprout up, right? But if you let grass grow up on the, if you let the farms die, the streets will have grass in them, right? It's just, our farmers are important, and to our communities, and to our country as a whole. Food security has taken on a new meaning with what's gone on in the world in the last 12 months. You know, you start looking at it, and food security is huge. And so when you start looking at that, that's going to be a positive thing for us going forward as producers, but it's a challenge.
So what can a producer do today?
When we talk about all of that, there's really, I think, three things that you think about. Our producers of today have to be, number one, great producers. They have to be able to manage the process and be great producers, right? So it's using the technology to grow crops, to improve production, take care of animals, do that kind of stuff, right? So that's huge, right? That's important. But that's table stakes nowadays. You aren't in business if you aren't a good producer. Now what we're looking for, we're adding to that, right? It's going on to the next level. The next things we need to look at are, so you've got to be a better financial manager now. So do you understand your books? Do you understand your cash flows? You know, I always think there's three reasons you keep books on a farm or records on a farm, right? The first one is you keep it, right, because you've got the tax man, right? The second reason you keep records on your farm is to satisfy the bank, right? So that brings in the balance sheet. But what we need to do is we need to get over here where it's we are keeping all those records to make financial decisions and wise choices and deployment of our capital on the farm to make good things and better efficient production and profitability for that operation. Then the third thing, the third leg of that stool to me on an operation now is risk management. And I don't mean just managing the price of your output or your inputs and all that. It's a holistic approach and looking at the whole operation. It's succession management. It's looking at, do you have the right insurance coverages in place? Do you have a life insurance policy that matches? I mean, just think about what our asset values have done in the last 20 months on the farm, and you look at what those asset values have. Do you have enough life insurance to cover that asset accumulation that you've had if you're looking at using that life insurance to be a funding of your succession plan? Is the policy high enough, right? So you've got to look at all those things when you're looking at that as a holistic approach to it.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We currently raise cattle on acreage we own and lease throughout Texas and in New Mexico and up into Kansas.
Jonathan Huseman is with Stockman's Beef Packing on the company goal of constructing a beef processing plant in north central Texas.
We're looking to construct 100 head a day beef slaughter and processing plant to do cull cows, some of our own cattle, and really offer processing services to other small producers within our region in order to market their products regionally and throughout the nation and even internationally as we will be USDA inspected. Nearest town is Gustine, Texas, and again, 100 head a day plant. And that's the driving factor for what we're trying to do.
So what are some of the details?
We intend for it to be state of the art, very best in Texas, USDA inspected slaughterhouse, and to address the need that we've identified for additional slaughter and further processing capacity. Additionally, we also want to pursue USDA organic certification. That presents its own set of difficulties and headwinds, and that'll be a follow-on effort. We know our average employee compensation will be well above the county average, even down to the entry-level employees. And we're intending to do everything the right way. Our animal holding and handling facilities will be designed according to Dr. Temple Grandin's principles.
He says the group is ready to go.
We already have our floor plan, all of our engineering documentation. All that has been completed. We're in the stage of receiving final approval for our wastewater permit and percolating through that process at the state level. Our location, we're in Comanche County, Texas. This is a very rural and agriculturally based community. Primarily, this is one of the main dairy regions within Texas and only growing in that industry. And the rest is farming and a lot of cow-calf operations. And we really feel that we'll be well-positioned geographically for those dairies and their cull cow needs, and also the small cow-calf operations of which we are a part of. And our investors are really going to be pulling from the cow-calf operation folks like us. We've spoken to many, many people in the past that say, oh, I'm looking at making my own plant. And then they realize the barrier to entry is pretty steep, logistically and regulatory and financially. It's a serious undertaking, but we're going to see it through. The distance, our plant, these are highway miles. We're only 110 miles from Fort Worth and down to 130 miles from Austin. This puts us close proximity to many millions of consumers and distribution centers and markets to make available to our more regional producers. The differentiating factors of our plant, we purchased a 177-acre grass farm that is up and running and has been for a very long time, with 7 water wells and 4 irrigation pivots. And the idea there is we can use our own well water, use less on the aggregate as compared to what the plant or what the farm needs for just grass operation. And then we will recycle our wastewater through land application on our irrigated acres and actually be able to reduce our fertilizer needs for our grass farm. We're pretty excited about that.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The date, January 15th, 2020. The place, the White House. The occasion,
the agreement tears down major market barriers for U.S. food and agricultural exports.
The U.S. and China signing the Phase 1 Ag Trade Agreement, committing China to buy historically large amounts of U.S. ag products. That agreement ended at the end of 2021, but since then, with no agreement, the value of Chinese purchases has continued to climb. USDA economist Bart Kinner says during the first 11 months of last year, Chinese purchases totaled
$33.7 billion, and that's a 15% increase over the same time in 2021.
Many U.S. products seeing big increases.
Soybean exports to China, $14.8 billion. That's up 25% over last year. Sorghum was up 16%. Beef and veal up 38%.
And to get this, U.S. cotton exports to China are running 137% above 2021. Gary Crawford, Washington.